Hello, everybody. This is Courtney Stanley, and welcome to another exciting episode of Dare to Interrupt, a listening experience where you have the opportunity to sit in on honest, unfiltered conversations with women who are considered to be the most influential, inspiring, and innovative women in the world of events, hospitality, business, and beyond. Throughout their careers, these leaders have dared to interrupt conversations, their own comfort zones, and sometimes even societal norms to hustle toward their greatest levels of success. I am so excited to introduce you to today's guest. She is a new friend of mine and one of my new favorite people. We're joined by Ashley Lawson, Vice President of Business Partnerships at Achieve Incentives and Meetings, also known as the industry's safe travel ambassador and known to me as one of the most creative and socially impact focused leaders that I have had the pleasure of working with and getting to know. It is so great to have you here today, Ashley, and I'm especially excited to ask you this first question. Where in the world are you joining us from?
And that's a big question because I've been traveling a lot, but I am very happy to be sharing that I am sending you sunshine from Placencia, Belize, and I am calling in from Itzana, a brand new resort here that I am doing a site visit today.
Okay, well, I am super jealous. I would do pretty much anything at this point to get in some natural sunlight. So why are you in Belize of all places? How did you end up there, especially during this time where so few people are actually getting on a plane and traveling? What brought you to Belize?
Yeah, so it's a little crazy. I took a big leap last year. And it really all started in the summer last year. We had a big program that we needed to postpone. And it was about 2,000 room nights in Cancun and just needed to have that face-to-face conversation with the hotel and our partners there. So I decided it was really important to get on a plane, and I did, and I was terrified. At that time, there was no information on safety and flying and traveling, and honestly was so scared. And I was up the entire night before the trip and just researching as much as I could and really couldn't find much. So I got my hand sanitizer ready. I got my N95 mask, and that's as equipped as I knew to be. And in that trip, I just learned so much about the safe travel experience, and it really spurred a mission to want to share my experience with others, because at that time, and still there is, just a hunger for information to know what it's like to be on the ground in other places. So my husband and I decided to take a huge jump and sold everything that we owned, our car, left our apartment. I have a few boxes of winter clothing in my mom's garage. But we decided we wanted to travel and explore the world, but I could really get to know what destinations were focused on with their safety protocols and how they were laying the ground for re-welcoming travelers in safe environments. And it's been fascinating, and I've loved really being able to share how destinations have been prepared, and they've done so much, and really just wanting to be a resource to our planning community to let them know things to consider as they are potentially hosting events this year, next year, in 2023. So we spent about 2 months traveling throughout Mexico to different areas that are most ideal for incentives, since that's where we focus our time at Achieve. And I came to Belize. One, it's a short flight from Cancun, but also I think there is going to be a new trend of where gatherings are going for companies. And I think there's going to be a much more adventure-focused, socially impact, sustainably minded, really just interest for where companies want to host their gatherings. So I wanted to come and explore Belize because it's really a mystery. And I've only been here for about 2 weeks, but learning a lot and kind of peeling back the layers of Belize and how it can be a potential gem for an incentive and retreat gathering destination.
That is super cool. And I feel like I feel like this is like the eat, pray, love experience that the yeah. industry is dying for right now, where people are like, I would love to, you know, pack my bags and go travel the world. And you're going to a new country every month, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were in, when I say we, my husband's obviously like tied to me now. So we were in Africa in December, and then went to Puerto Vallarta and Cancun and Playa del Carmen, where I hosted our Site Midwest board retreat, and then came to Belize this month. And next month, it's we're open. I'm kind of leaning on the industry to tell me, you know, where should we go? Where do you want the layers peeled back on destinations that are really intriguing and have, you know, somewhat of the infrastructure to host safe and engaging events.
I love that you're leaving it so open too. And I am challenging the listeners of this podcast to tell Ashley where you want her to go next and where you want her to explore next. I'm definitely going to be doing that too. Ashley, what's your Instagram, social media, contact info? How can they do this?
Oh, yeah. You can follow me at Ashley Rose on the Road on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn, but my Instagram, I pretty much show like minute by minute what's happening, just all the safety protocols. It's very safe ambassador of travel minded. And you can see the sunshine wherever I'm at.
Well, I definitely like watching your Instagram stories. That's for sure. Oh, okay. So if somebody were to ask you, hey, Ashley, is it safe to travel right now? What would you say to them?
I would say it's up to the traveler and how you prepare and arrive and experience the destination. You know, this is my third country that I've been in. I've been on over 30 flights since the pandemic started. I've been COVID-free the entire time, but that's because I've been a very socially conscious traveler. I get tested before I go anywhere. I get tested on the ground when I'm there. And I really respect all of the protocols. And sometimes I go over and beyond what the protocols are in place. Like here in Belize, there is a curfew. It happens to be election day. So curfew has moved up. So curfew is 10 o'clock p.m. on every day. Election day, 8 p.m. You've got to be in early. There are mask wearing policies everywhere you are. You can't be eating or drinking on the street walking. You need to have your mask on. I really don't go anywhere that's not outdoors if I'm in a public space. So that's why it's actually pretty ideal to be in tropical locations doing site visits now, because I can do everything outside. I can easily be distanced from the hotel teams here, their staff, and really get a feel for their quality of service and the product that they've got here. So I would say for me, I am a very socially safe, conscious traveler. And I think if you're willing to be diligent and say no. I mean, that's the thing. Like when you're traveling, you want to do everything. You want to go to the restaurants and the bars and experience the beauty, the allure, the adventure. But you have to say no. You can't go to that bar or that top restaurant that's indoors. So I think it's up to you to make it the safe travel experience for individuals. And then obviously on the planner side, there's a lot more to go into about really setting the stage for a safe environment.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because we do have a lot of planners that listen into this podcast, or they have some sort of decision-making role in organizing meetings and events. So what have you seen that has worked really well? And actually, you should tell the audience a little bit about the board retreat that you just hosted and how that worked for you too.
Yeah. So I think my belief is that with gathering and safe gathering this year, I think it's up to the industry to really lead the way, to perfect, to research, to understand how to do that. Because, you know, we can't go to associations, companies who are, you know, very conscious of their, whether it's their sales force or their customer award winners. We can't put them in situations that we've not put ourselves in as an industry. So that's why I really push forward in wanting to host our board retreat internationally for Site Midwest. So we went to Playa del Carmen, Paradisus Playa del Carmen, and I had already been there during the pandemic, so I was fully aware of all of their safety protocols that were in place. I think what's really unique about Mexico is that they have a countrywide approach to how the tourism and hospitality industry could reopen. So every single person who works in Mexico in the hospitality industry, everyone from hotel housekeepers to GMs to taxi drivers to tour operators, they have to take a very in-depth test and certification in order to rejoin their job. So they've spent at least 30 hours getting trained and prepped and certified in knowing how to lead a safe environment. So that was intentional that I wanted to be in an environment that I'd already been. So I would say absolutely do site visits before you select a destination. As planners, we are the ambassadors of our events. So if we don't have like the real life experience of feeling safe, we can't convey that to our attendees. And I think that's vital because our attendees are looking to us as the beacon of safety. You know, there's a lot of fear around travel. And in many cases, you know, for our retreat, this was the first time some of our board members had gone international since the pandemic. So we had to be very mindful and intentional about the communications we sent in advance. And just making sure that everybody felt prepped. Like I knew from my travel experiences that a lot of the shops in the airports aren't open. And, you know, flying to Cancun, especially from Cleveland, where I'm from, like, it's never a direct flight. So it can be a long travel day, and there's no food anywhere, and they weren't serving food on the plane. So bring snacks. Have at least 12 ounces of sanitizer with you, because TSA now allows that increased amount for carry-on. But I would say, as planners, like, we need to be the experts to best convey and prepare our attendees for everything. And, you know, even so much as having the link to the travel survey beforehand, because they can fill it out in advance, and just anything you can take off the fear category of travel and prepare your attendees, like, it's going to allow them to feel more excited about the event than fearful.
Yeah, I think your point about preparation is definitely important. And I think what's happening, generally speaking, not even just within our industry, but generally speaking, is there's a very black and white approach to gathering in person. I think on one side of the spectrum, people who are, you know, excited to get back together in person and are planning to get back together in person, whether it's, you know, at their company or socially or whatever it is, a lot of times are looked at as dismissive of the seriousness of the pandemic, versus the other side of the spectrum, where people who decide to stay home and they're going to quarantine, they're not going to travel, they're not going to go to any in-person experiences, are considered to be safe, and there's really no in between. So what's interesting about what you're doing is that I know you personally. So I know what type of person you are, and that you do actually take safety very, very seriously. You consider it a personal responsibility to make sure that not only are you safe, but so are the people around you. So you fall into this strange little world that's kind of the middle of this spectrum, where you are extremely responsible and aware and prepared when it comes to safety, but you're also traveling. You know, hearing that you've taken 30 flights, you know, since the pandemic began, like, that's crazy to me. That blows my mind. I don't think I've heard anybody else say that, unless it was somebody who maybe falls on more of the dismissive side of that spectrum. So I guess my question is, how can we bring more people to the center of the spectrum where, as you're discovering and as you're experiencing, it actually can be safe in certain situations to gather in person, to get on a plane? So what can we be doing together as a community to help educate each other and encourage each other to find maybe a little bit more of a balanced view so that we can continue, well, really keeping our industry afloat and alive?
It's funny how you described it that way. I think you're right. I am in this like very little Venn diagram.
Yes. It's a teeny, teeny, tiny little spot that you're living in right now. And I want to be in that spot too, you know?
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about being personally responsible for your travel experience. And as I said before, I do think it's up to the meetings industry to be leading the way at your comfort level. And this is a this is a judgment-free zone. Like if somebody doesn't want to travel, totally get it. If somebody is up for traveling and doing it safely, on board. So I say, you know, everything right now is a judgment-free zone because you have to choose not just what affects you, you choose what affects your family. And I think that was one of the most terrifying, anxiety-provoking parts of hosting that our board retreat for Site Midwest in Cancun. And ultimately, as president and the planner of this event, I was responsible for not just my board members' safety, but their family's safety, their community's safety, everybody they interacted with between the event and 14 days after they got home. So I think it's just recognizing that we have such a bigger responsibility to the community at large. And that's why we did do testing in advance. And we mailed everybody, collection kits beforehand. And then we got tested on site. And then everybody got tested post-program. And that's just being mindful of all of the different communities that we're interacting with. And I understand that, you know, politics do come into play, but I don't think that as a planner, as somebody who just experienced the anxiety of being responsible for all of these people's safety and health is not about politics to me. It's about their families. So every decision that I made, and there were a lot of hard decisions. I mean, there's a lot of opinions that go into, you know, what is actually necessary and what isn't. And I get that. And everybody's welcome to their own opinions. As I said, judge-free zone. But at the end of the day, as planners, we're responsible to the families our attendees go home to. So that's who I had in mind when I was planning. And that's also what I think about when I travel. You know, if I'm at a restaurant, always outdoors, or if I'm at a hotel, I'm thinking about how I've been safe for any of the workers that interact with me. Those servers, those dishwashers, those, you know, those cooks, whoever it is, how I travel affects that person's family. So that's always top of mind for me. And that's not politics. That's love. That's family. That's how do we support one another and be safe together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a ripple effect for sure. Yeah. And I love that you framed it as you're thinking about the families that your attendees go back to. I think that's actually a really cool community-oriented way to look at that type of situation. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any pushback from people? So two-part question. Have you gotten any side eye, any shade, any judgment, any like weirdness from people who are seeing you travel first and foremost? But then also, did you get any pushback from the attendees at your board retreat? Or, you know, how did you handle that if that did happen?
Yeah, I think so. There is this whole, you know, vibe of travel shaming that has gone on since this started. And I would probably say I was part of that community at the beginning. I was like, what are you doing? We have to protect ourselves. We were told that, you know, we have to quarantine and be safe. And what are you doing traveling? And then I think, one, I didn't have a choice. I needed to salvage a 2,000 room night incentive, and I needed to go to Cancun. And it was just kind of like, okay, this is business. Let's do this. And then through learning so much, I haven't really gotten any pushback. I've just gotten fascination and tell me more and, you know, what would you do in these scenarios? So I think as I am sharing information and leading as a resource, not as a look at me, because it's definitely not that, you know, like I want to be a resource to this community. I've learned so much. I've created a brand new spreadsheet for a site inspection checklist because there's literally 1,000 more questions that we need to ask. And, you know, there's probably 200 new steps that go into just the check-in experience. And just being able to be a resource to meeting planners, our planning community, and even friends and family who are asking, you know, my daughter's wedding is coming up. What do you think I should do? So, you know, this is something that's affecting us all in monumental ways. And I think by leading with education and knowledge has allowed me to open, you know, just perspectives up to what I'm doing. And then in terms of your second question with the Site Midwest retreat, some of the questions I got around the testing, because it was very critical to me that we all tested beforehand. There's a lot of reasons why. One is I want to know that the people I'm around and I'm around were safe for each other. I want to make sure that we're safe for the destination that we're interacting with. And also, as I was planning, there was that brand new CDC rule, which I am fully in favor of making sure that international arrivals have negative tests before coming in. I think that kind of just, that was like, whoa, and we didn't know that that was a brand new thing. And at the time, no hotels were offering complimentary testing. So it was just kind of a brand new hurdle that we needed to manage. But even before that announcement, I did make the decision that we should get tested beforehand. And there was some questions like, well, Mexico isn't requiring this. Why do we need to do this? And as I explained my reasons before, that's what I shared. And everybody was like on board. And the thing with planning now and planning safely is that you have to take away every pain point, every expense, every frustration that is involved with safety from your attendees. So when I was thinking about the tests, I knew from my experience in Ohio, it's really complicated and frustrating trying to get a test in some parts. Like I had to be on the phone with my doctor for an entire day begging them to give me a PCR test before I went to Africa. I couldn't just readily get that. So I knew in order for people to adhere and adopt the safety principles I was setting forth, I needed to make it easy. So that's when I found Eurofins, which is a fantastic resource all planners should look into. Please reach out to me. I'll send you their information. But they mail home test collection kits, and it's just a nasal swab, and you mail it back. It's overnighted. Their lab returns results by email in 48 hours. I took away all the pain points. They didn't have to call anybody. They didn't have to pay for anything. It was free and it was easy. And that's what we have to think through every single safety protocol we're implementing to make it frictionless for our attendees. So they will be willing to adhere to and adopt them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have so many great resources too. I think it's so important that you point to the need to educate yourself. And if you think about any travel experience, the first time, you know, you traveled abroad or the first time you tried to take New York City metro system, like it is overwhelming and you don't really become comfortable until you either educate yourself or you experience it and learn from those experiences. So I do want the audience to definitely reach out to you and also just to check out Achieve's website, because you've been blogging, you've been sharing all these checklists and these resources, and it's great that you're sharing that information with the industry so that we can hopefully, you know, evolve and move forward and grow together and feel safe and feel okay about that process as well. Ashley, I also want the audience to just get an opportunity to know you on more of a personal level, because you're an amazing person and you have the biggest heart of anybody that I know. And I would love for you to share a little bit about your career journey. And then I want to dig into some questions there too, because you've done some pretty cool stuff in your career.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I say that I was born into the industry, and that's because my grandparents actually started Achieve 70 years ago. So I was raised by world travelers who were just incessant about learning about different cultures and traditions and people and languages and backgrounds. And I remember growing up, my friends would have grandmas who would make them cookies. And I'm like, why doesn't my grandma make me cookies? And, and that's because she was riding llamas and elephants and climbing the Sydney Harbour Bridge and, you know, hosting toga parties in Rome. And, you know, I think now I'm just so grateful that that's my grandma. And I still love me some cookies. But I'm glad that I had that grandma. But I was also raised, I think my identities lie in, I was raised by a single mom and I am a Cleveland Browns fan. So I think that makes me have like an unbelievably high empathetic work ethic. And I am really resilient and persevering and hopeful when I shouldn't be. So I think those identities like make up who my DNA. So growing up with just a single mom and being an only child, we were and still are thick as thieves. And I saw just our community around us help. And you know, I had clothes because my cousins were the same size as I was, and I'm not even 5 feet, so I never grew. So that my mom always says that was very helpful because she didn't have to keep buying me new shoes, school clothes. But just being wrapped around in that hug of community, as my mom was a single mom raising me by herself, I think, you know, community was just everything to me, and I always wanted to be able to give back in a really significant way. So when I went to college, I focused on nonprofit management. That was my calling. I wanted to make an impact. And so that's what I did. So I moved to DC after college and worked at a homeless services agency for 10 years. And it was called Miriam's Kitchen. And it's a fabulous organization that it's not a Band-Aid. Everything that the organization has is around the holistic experience of ending homelessness. So it's meals, clothing, vitamins, medical support, doctors, attorneys, and housing, but also advocacy. So getting to the root cause of an issue, because if we're just band-aiding everything, we're never gonna get out of it. And I always said, as a nonprofit, your main goal is to work yourself out of a job. Like, how do we make sure that there's no homelessness anymore? And everything we did was based on, okay, let's put ourselves out of a job so nobody is experiencing homelessness in the district. And that's kind of where I say I grew up as an adult in DC, and just being so surrounded by, such advocates for social causes and making sure that I was just aware of. I think what is so beautiful about DC is the diversity of it. You know, there you walk down the street, there's people from so many different countries, areas of America. You know, the World Bank is there, so you hear 30 different languages as you walk down the street to the metro. And it spoke to my heart, because as I shared, I grew up with that love of learning about new people and places that I had never been. And that's kind of what made DC so special for me. It was this microcosm of what my grandparents always talked about. So I got my start in leading some pretty high-end events there and managing all of our fundraising and really looking at building corporate partnerships from a mutually beneficial way. So I think, you know, I didn't want to be like, donate to us, give us the handout, but how can we work together to be mutually beneficial and impactful together? So I kind of turned sponsorships on its head there, and we ended up basically selling volunteer experiences. And at that time, like, volunteering wasn't that sexy. It wasn't what every company was talking about in their marketing materials. They didn't have many foundations focused on this. And I was just trying to do things a different way where it wasn't a handout, but it was a let's work together and make each other strong. And let's, you know, bring more influence and dollars to an issue that we mutually cared about so we can make an impact together. And through that, I was very lucky to have such incredible big corporate partners like Boeing, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, even the White House. So that's when the when Michelle Obama was making their the White House garden, and started a partnership with the White House. And they every week would bring over produce from the White House garden. And we used to joke around that we had the most protected, safe produce on the planet because it would come in a black armored vehicle. so we had lots of fun with that. And I got to plan Michelle Obama's visit to our kitchen, and it was just incredible seeing her kindness. And she was towering over me. I mean, as I said, I'm not even 5 feet, but just getting to watch her interact with our guests, and our guests were mostly men experiencing homelessness and had been experiencing homelessness for decades and living with severe mental health issues. And typically our guests, you know, if they were on the streets of D.C., they were ignored. But then the first lady came into our kitchen and she hugged them and, you know, gave them high fives and asked their name, asked what they cared about. And, that was just such a powerful moment from a planning perspective, seeing such a high-powered person and bringing their empathy to our kitchen. And I always remember that as I'm planning events, and it's, you know, how do we bring more empathy to everybody's journey within your event, both your attendees, your speakers, your special guests, whoever it might be. And that's kind of where I got my start with planning pretty awesome events. And then there was So about 10 years into working there, my grandfather had started getting very sick, and it just kind of, when you have such a significant person in your life and you see them coming to the end of their life, it breaks you. And it was kind of like, okay, I've been in DC, I've been giving back to a community that I care about so deeply, but my family's my community. And I think it was an opportunity for me to explore a brand new experience. And even though I learned my ABCs alphabetizing flight itineraries in the company, I really wasn't knowledgeable about, you know, global event production and incentives and meetings. So I am somebody who kind of doesn't need to have the full scope of information to jump. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. You know, nobody in the third generation of our family had shown any interest, and it was kind of, you know, this was a legacy. This was being able to join my passion for celebrating people, building community, and helping people explore the world in really unique ways. So it's a roundabout way to getting here.
And you're such a great storyteller too. I was getting emotional when you were talking about Michelle Obama coming into the kitchen and hugging your guests. And that's just, gosh, I just feel like that's what life is about. And I think we get so caught up in, you know, the minute day-to-day worries and stresses and challenges. And I think that coming back to human connection and really building community and nurturing relationships and showing people empathy, I think that those are the things that really matter, frankly. And I hope that this is a good reminder for anybody listening. It's definitely a good reminder for me to step outside of my little box and my quarantine bubble and to look at the bigger picture of what we're all here for and, you know, how we can actually make an impact during our lives and the time that we have to do that. So yeah. You've been driven by this desire to really connect with people and to create an impact and to do all of these great servant leadership initiatives. And I know that you've tied some of that passion into the work that you're doing now. What are some of the most maybe meaningful experiences that you've created within your time at Achieve, and how have you been able to bring sort of that servant leadership, community-oriented mission to the events that you've been a part of?
I think, and this is what gets me giddy, because I come from very different places than most people have in this industry. And I think it's awesome when I met you that really your foundation was in nonprofit too. And we were like, no way. Tell me more. I love that. We could connect over that. So I think, you know, my joy is when I get to merge my two worlds together, and that's social impact and travel and connections and experiences. And, one of my favorite things that I've had the opportunity to be part of was actually with Site Midwest. So in 2019, we did our very first international event, and it was also at Paradisus Playa del Carmen. And it was, we were thinking about, okay, how can we incorporate CSR, corporate social responsibility, into this gathering of event planners and event leaders? And this is probably going to sound really obnoxious, but as somebody from nonprofit who has really focused on creating truly impactful experiences, I can be pretty snobby about the volunteer experiences that I experience, because I want them to be really impactful. And I know from experience that I've seen, like, maybe a group goes to a school and, you know, you just might be painting the same wall that had been painted like four times that month, because we need engagement experiences and opportunities. But I think I wanted to go beyond the painting, beyond the let's build toiletry kits, and those all have a place and those are all super important. But I really wanted to make a deeper, you know, forward-focused impact. So we talked to the hotel and kind of did a needs assessment, just as I would have in my nonprofit work. Like, tell me what this community needs. Where are you falling short that you could use our support, whether it's time, a donation, or advocacy? And at the time, one of the longest serving employees of the hotel, his 6-year-old son, Carlos, had been diagnosed with severe epilepsy and was having hundreds of seizures each day. And they needed a life-saving surgery brain surgery for Carlos in order for him really to live. And once we heard that, we said, okay, that is it. That is our focus. We need to provide support and love and care and a life-saving surgery to Carlos. And at the time, the family had tried to do fundraising and just weren't able to get enough. And it was a significant amount. And they needed to fly to Mexico City. So for the Site Midwest Smart Forum, in Playa del Carmen, we did an auction, and our sponsors were incredible, donated so many great stays. And then our attendees and sponsors were incredible, because then they kept bidding and bidding, and we were able to raise enough money for Carlos to be flown literally the next day to Mexico City to get the brain surgery that he needed. And I had the joy of being able to introduce Carlos to the conference, and we did an interview, and he shared a little bit about how he loved Transformers and drawing, and he couldn't wait to ride a bike because his arms weren't strong enough because of the seizures. And it was just such an honor to be able to bring our event community together and use our togetherness as a platform for making this life-changing experience for Carlos. And I was actually at the hotel a few weeks ago, and I saw Carlos's dad, and he said he's doing really well, and he's riding a bike. And I think I struggled a lot moving into the industry because I deeply missed having that purpose-driven, mission-focused, heartbeat. And I think what we do, and I missed recognizing that the meetings community is really freaking powerful when we work together and when we use a platform for change. And I think before that experience, I had been like, what am I doing? Like, I want to make an impact, but I'm not ending homelessness anymore. It was like this disconnect and I missed it. And having that experience with Site Midwest, and this is a huge plug for leaders, meeting leaders in the industry, like get involved with your associations. Like there are so many powerful experiences, friendships, partnerships that come through it, but you gain such different perspective. And I honestly did feel lost for a little bit. And having that experience, seeing what we were able to do as a meetings community made me recognize that like I'm not missing that purpose-driven, mission-focused organization. I can bring it to wherever I am. And we can do that with our clients around the world with the retreats and incentives we plan. And I was missing that perspective. So I was able to gain that through being involved with Site Midwest. And I'm so grateful and super proud to serve as president now and just learning so much every day. So I was able to merge my two loves together and just recognize how powerful we are as an industry.
That's freaking incredible. that story is just amazing. And it's like, it's such a high, realizing that you can make an impact like that. It truly lights your soul on fire. And I'm sure a little bit, it's a little bit addicting too, where you're like, how can I do that again? How can I change somebody's life? And that's a great addiction to have. It's a transformative addiction. I think that's amazing. I think that's so wonderful. And I think it's also worth just revisiting the fact that you felt maybe a little bit like a stranger to the industry when you first transitioned from working for a nonprofit to joining, the incentive industry, and how you felt maybe a little bit unfamiliar with the type of work that we do and that kind of thing. And I think it's amazing to have somebody like you that isn't originally from the industry. You didn't enter hospitality straight out of college, but you worked in a completely different field doing entirely different things, and you were able to bring that experience to the industry. So I just think it's awesome. I think it's great. I think everybody has a place in every space, that you work in, that you're exploring, that you're considering jumping into. I think that sometimes we second guess ourselves a little bit too much, and it can take a little bit of a toll on our sense of confidence and the value that we bring to the table. But look at what you did. Like you took that experience and you totally changed the game and somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. And I would say we did it. I had a role, but it was definitely a we. Absolutely. And I just got to do needs assessments wherever I am. Like, tell me how we can make a really powerful impact. Because I think, when I talk to the attendees of that conference, that's the first thing that they remember. And it's so special that every single person there gets to align their identity with knowing Carlos can ride his bike again. And that might sound silly to some, but I think when you make an impact together in a meeting, in an incentive, in a retreat, whenever you're bringing people together and you get to collectively make a life-changing impact, that bonds you guys forever. And that is definitely like something I would recommend to meeting planners. Like as you are thinking about your events, like how can you bond your people in brand new ways? And just, coming from that empathy aspect of, let's come together, let's have an awesome experience, but let's do something bigger than us. Let's do something we're going to remember and be proud of 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now. And I think that's where we elevate the events industry even more.
I think we've covered so many topics today, and I think we could probably continue our conversation for hours like we usually do on our Friday calls. But I would love to hear from you. You know, we've talked about travel, we've talked about safety and COVID, and we've talked about community and impact. And I'd love to maybe just get one final piece of advice from you for other people in our industry who maybe are looking to make more of an impact in their community or at their company. If they don't really know where to start, what advice could you give them to help them take those steps in that direction?
Oh, that's such a big question. I think, as you said before, it's what sets your soul on fire. And for me, that's impact, that's travel, that's community. And through this crazy year of being a safe travel ambassador, I get to combine all of those things. And because of it, I'm having so much fun. And it's safe fun. So I would say it's like light fun in some ways. But I get excited about it. I get excited about talking about everything I'm learning about, because I do believe this industry is going to just like skyrocket once we have, you know, a little bit more understanding with getting the vaccines rolled out and we do feel safer. But we know more than anything that coming together is the fireworks of, you know, of life. It's where we light up. It's where we pop. It's where, you know, it's the fun of life. And, you know, just be thinking about what you do like in your role and what you don't like in your role, and formulate something new. And, you know, at Achieve, I had been really focused on kind of like our sales and marketing efforts, but it wasn't in a way that I was like, oh, I can't wait to get out an RFP. It was like, okay, like, you know, like that wasn't my joy. So I recreated what sales and marketing is to me. And to me, it's providing valuable resources and connection and, you know, being a sounding board, being a friend, any way that I can help anybody in this community make their events safer, make it so that when their attendees go home to their families, those families are safe, that community is safe. Like that gets me fired up. That gets me excited, because I feel like, as you say, like I did feel out of place, and I had to find my place and I had to recreate it. And sometimes you just have to, you know, like dig deep into figuring out where your joy is and then recreate what you've got by, you know, but you can still be focused on the same goals, just doing it in a different way. And I think also investing in yourself. And, you know, this is the first year I've worked with a coach. It's the first year I've been as a senior leader on a meetings association board. And they're both giving me such critical skills and experience so I can be stronger and more knowledgeable and just more confident. So I'd say definitely invest in yourself. And I always tell women, and maybe this isn't part of what could go here, but I tell women, no matter how old you are, invest in your 401k. The first thing, I know that sounds silly, but like we started an internship program. I always tell our young interns, our young leaders, like start now. And that was one of the first pieces of advice my coworker gave me when I started at my nonprofit in DC. And I was like, what? I don't have any ability. Like I was living in DC on nonprofit salary as a first year. But I did it. And I'm so glad that I have continued to do it. And I think as women, when that is part of investing in you. So whether it's skills, investing in your own financial freedom and, you know, security, it's so important. And just keep asking for more, you know, whether I am in a very privileged position where I do serve as a co-owner of Achieve. So I've got a lot of autonomy that I'm very grateful for. But I knew that was important to me. And that's a big reason why I did move to the company. So really focus on what are your must-haves, what are your values in a position, and what lights you up to get you to more of that joyous space.
And to all the people who love looking at RFPs, it's still important that you invest. I actually love that you tacked that on to the end here, Ashley, because we don't talk about investing enough. We really, really don't. And I also invest, and I was fortunate enough to have a father figure who, you know, stepped in and showed me the ropes and got me set up and started. And it's kind of crazy seeing how much adds up over, you know, even a handful of years. And you don't really necessarily notice that money going out the door if you're in a, you know, a decent financial position. I know it can be tough, but it's important. And it's so wonderful knowing that, you know, you can look at your projections, you can sit down with the financial advisor if you have one, and they can tell you at what age you'll have enough to retire and survive on. And I just think that's so important, especially because you know, people are living longer, and sure, they're working longer too, but at some point you're going to want to stop looking at RFPs for a living and take a vacation, you know, for the last two decades of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think women, we sometimes forget to invest in ourselves, and there's many ways to invest in yourself. So I think that's a big, important one.
I think so too, Ashley. Thank you so much for being with us today on Dare to Interrupt. Thank you for sharing all of your insight, all of your safety tips, all of your knowledge, and a lot of your really cool stories that I think you should definitely put on paper and I would love to read about. And thank you all for listening to this episode. Share what you learned from Ashley with, of course, Ashley on social media, and again with meetings today and with me at Courtney on Stage, whether you're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or something else. And be sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to Dare to Interrupt on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and more. Stay daring, be determined, and keep supporting your community and your growth, my friends. Until next time.